Today, we've got big news. Nat Turner is coming on the show to tell us about PSA's current plans with their reopening and what the future is likely to hold.
My name is Jeff Wilson. By day, I invest in tech companies. And at night, I invest in sports cards. Join me on my journey to profit from the hobby we all love.
Sports card investors, and welcome to a really big episode because we're going to hear some great stuff from Nat Turner. We're going to learn about PSA's plans and what to expect July 1st and in the future from PSA in terms of reopening and what pricing could look like and whatever details he can give us, we're going to get as many details as we can right now. And of course, this episode of Sports Card Investor is brought to you by eBay, your number one spot for cards and collectibles. With the largest inventory of sports cards from basketball to soccer and buyers from all over the globe, eBay is the leading place to buy, sell, and invest your cards. Okay, this interview you are about to hear, these are just some of the short cut-up highlights of a longer interview that I did with Nat. And it may be worth your time to listen to the full interview because the full interview is over an hour long. And not only do I talk to Nat in depth about all of PSA's plans, but I also spend the first part of the interview talking to him about his business and entrepreneurial background and how somebody gets to the point where they can acquire PSA in the first place. How somebody accumulates that type of wealth and that type of business acumen to be able to acquire PSA. So if you're curious about hearing Nat's backstory and how he got to where he is and what business advice he may have for you and other entrepreneurs out there, then you want to hear the full interview. And the full interview is on our sister YouTube channel called The Owner's Suite by Sports Card Investor. So if you want to hear the full interview, then pause this one right now and go over to the channel called The Owner Suite by Sports Card Investor. The full interview is there. Also, it's on our podcast, The Owner Suite by Sports Card Investor podcast. And please subscribe to those because every single week we're putting out new long format interviews with huge influential people in the sports card hobby and NFTs and rare collectibles and fantasy sports and all kinds of really interesting fields. So subscribe to the Owner's Suite to get those interviews. Go there now to hear Nat's full interview. Or if you just want to hear some of the highlights, then we're going to play them for you right now. Welcome Nat Turner to Sports Card Investor. I know the sports card community is excited to have you at the helm. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that means here in just a minute and the current going ons at PSA. One more question. So you a few minutes ago said that one of the things that had you discouraged about sports cards before this PSA journey began was the fact that there was a lot of investors that have kind of come into the market. You've got funds starting. You've got people who are in it for the money and big investment. And I will own up to the fact that certainly my channel covers a lot of that aspect of sports cards and the dollar and cents movement and attracts those people. Now, myself personally, I am both a big investor in sports cards and a big collector of sports cards. And I try to emphasize both on the channel. And I have seen on the positive, I have seen a number of people, many, many people who have come in from the investment side, but have actually kind of fallen in love with the collecting side as well. And so they've almost moved somewhat from investor to collector. And I think that even myself, I've done some of that too. But I'm curious, the interesting juxtaposition there is that it's a lot of that crowd that has fueled the growth of PSA over the course of the last couple of years and probably, I would imagine, is integral to the continued growth of PSA and the continued growth of the hobby. Or do you not see it that way? Do you think the investor crowd continues to be unhealthy for the hobby and PSA?
Yeah, like, again, I don't ever think it was unhealthy. I think it was just like a personal belief or as a collector, I was getting outbid on cards that I really wanted from people I knew didn't care about the card. So it was more just like a bump, like the PMG Green set that I'm after, like two or three times, like common players that like truly like, I know because a couple of them like reached out to me like a day later, like, hey, I'll sell this to you for $5,000 more than I just paid for it. So it was that kind of stuff. It wasn't the, they're ruining the hobby, but I would say from a collector perspective, Collector's Universe, you know, we are, it's in our name. We support collectors. That's what we're about. And it's totally fine if you want to go after cards because it's a good investment. I mean, look, I'm not bummed that my cards are worth more than they were before. I mean, that's awesome. I love that. But that's not why I'm doing it. And, you know, we certainly want to support them, but our primary focus, you know, is always going to be on folks that collect cards for, you know, the hobby, for the passion. You know, I don't think you're going to see us, you know, doing things like, you know, lending, you know, for, to, you know, giving credit lines for people to buy cards and that sort of thing, you know, that kind of stimulates the investor side of it. We're truly, you know, I think we do have an opportunity and should facilitate more transactions, you know, authentic, you know, trusted transactions so people, collectors can buy the things they want, know they're getting what they want and make sure it's authenticated. But, you know, there's a line there for us that we don't want to cross, you know, on the investor side of things. But like I said, I love the fact that they're in the hobby. I think it just needs to be a healthy balance. You know, certain cards, you see it, you know, I think the investors who don't understand cards, they don't realize the population of certain cards that they mm-hmm. run up. And then, you know, we see it at PSA when there's a rush of people trying to get those cards graded. You know, they're yelling at me on Instagram, like, why isn't my card graded? The prices are going down. I'm like, look, like, you know, you're not the only one, you know. 40,000 other people also submitted a bunch of Zion rookie cards. So
yeah,
it's just a really funny ecosystem now, but I think overall it's very healthy. I mean, in the last 6 months, especially, I think, you know, you've seen a rebalancing of, you know, the folks that are in it for the long term are still in it. And the folks that maybe, you know, saw a crypto style, like, you know, store of value buzz, you know, 6 months ago, maybe aren't in it anymore, but that's okay. I think they still, you know, maybe they come back. You know, they dipped their toes in. I've seen that for the last 20 years. I mean, in 2010, you saw this huge run up in Jordan prices. You know, it's the same damn thing. Just, you know, history's repeating itself.
One thing that everyone's curious about, you made the reference to, you know, people, their cards sitting at PSA. And of course, I've heard a lot of people say, oh my gosh, when I sent my cards to PSA, they were worth a lot more than they are today. What is the backlog like? How are you guys doing on catching up? When do you feel like you're going to be at a good point?
Yeah, I mean, we're making a dent every day. I mean, we're still in, you know, suspended. I mean, you can't send new cards in unless it's a pretty high service level. The primary reason was that we had to catch up on order entry. Like, we truly didn't, we weren't able to open all the boxes that we received. The demand was so high in Q1. We had a power surge of demand, as I've referred to it, in early March, where on a single day, we received, you know, 30x our ability to service the demand on a single day. And that's just not, no company in the world can flex. You know, we didn't have enough people to open the boxes and so on. So the primary reason we suspended was to catch up on that, because it's just not okay to not be able to tell someone, hey, your box is here, your cards are safe, we've itemized and so on and so forth. So we're caught up there, which is great on order entry. On the actual backlog, I mean, it's going to be a process. I mean, we're hiring as many people as we can. We're implementing technology. Yeah, we're going to be living with a pretty high backlog probably for at least a year. You know, it's just, there's no, unless we decrease quality, which we're never going to do. Like, that is, as a collector, I'm very happy to be involved here, because God forbid a PE firm, you know, owns PSA. They say, hey, just grade twice as many cards per day. What's the big deal? You know, just slap an 8 or 9 or 10 on each one. You know, who cares? That's not how we roll. You know, we're, you know, taking just as seriously as we ever did. And so the grading team, you know, is under no additional, you know, quotas or anything like that to catch up. They have to take their time doing it at the way they did before. So it's going to take us a while to get through. We're very cautious on reopening, you know, to make sure we don't have the same problem we did in March, you know, as you know, the avalanche of cards we received. We don't want that to happen again. So the team is working through kind of what the right way to reopen is as far as new submissions. It's going to be a balance where we have to continue to eat into the backlog. You know, so in other words, we're not going to be able to support the same number of cards that we received in years prior, because we need to reserve some of our capacity for grading for what we have already in the building. So,
when you first put out the announcement about the shutdown, I believe there was, as part of that announcement, there was a hope that by July 1st, some, if not all, levels of service would be able to be restored. We're on the precipice of July 1st now. How are things looking in that regard?
We're going to reopen some service levels for sure. It's not going to be what it is today. I think we're trying to strike the balance, as I alluded to, of what's the balance that allows us to receive. The demand is such that we receive fewer cards than we actually can grade so that we can use some of that capacity for the backlog on an ongoing basis. You know, for months on end, we were receiving multiples the number of cards per day than we could actually grade.
Right.
And that's just, you know, and like I said, it surged at the end of March, and we just said, you know, we threw our hands up and like, this isn't, you know, it's not okay anymore. So we're going to do it through a combination of limiting service levels, but also through pricing, which we've already done. You know, we raised pricing in March. Our competitors did the exact same thing. It's the cleanest way to kind of increase and decrease incoming demand. I don't know the specifics of what it'll be come July. It actually is a few weeks away still. So we still have some, you know, things to work through. Our biggest thing is we don't want to repeat our mistake that we made in March. So.
Right. So do you think, and I know we got a little bit of time here before, you know, you guys have to make an official decision, but do you think on July 1st, there will be some additional levels of service opened, perhaps at a higher price is what you're alluding to?
I'm not sure. We will have additional service levels open than what they're today, whether or not they're at the same price from what they were in March, TBD.
Okay. So additional service levels will open July 1st.
And at lower than our current levels, 300, they'll be cheaper than that.
Okay. Additional service levels will open, not all service levels, but
maybe, I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I would tell you if I knew. We're still working it through. We're just being very cautious on what the demand will be. We're actually surveying our customers right now, by the way, to get some intel and kind of, hey, if we introduced at these levels, what would you send in and so on? So.
Were you terrified when you decided to shut down on March 30th? It was perhaps not coincidentally, I think the day before Prison Basketball release.
Yeah, I know. That was not planned.
I thought that was a very intentional maneuver because you were worried that you were about to get flooded with LaMelo Ball cards.
No, I had nothing to do with that. We received like 5,000 FedEx packages on a single day.
Yeah.
I forget the exact day, it was on a Monday, but I mean, no, that was why we shut down, because we were terrified of the box. We didn't have physical storage for these boxes, as an example. The postal service in Southern California like broke because so I mean, that was why we shut down. I was actually relieved. I remember Steve and Joe called me and they were like, hey, we need to, you know, make the tough call here. And do you object? And I was like, absolutely not, you know, go for it. And it was a big relief. And I'll tell you, the biggest relief was, you know, I got a lot of pretty nasty messages when we raised prices a couple weeks prior to that, is what it is. I didn't get any negative. I mean, in fact, most people sent me nice, not that I run the business based on, you know, my direct messages, but, you know, a lot of people were like, hey, that was a really important move. Great. You know, love to see it. Blah, blah. I think people respected it. It was a tough call. Cause I mean, we, like I said before, I mean, imagine as a public company, I mean, you're literally, you know, turning away people begging to give you money, but we had to do it. I mean, it was just so obvious. In many ways, I regret we didn't do it sooner, but you know.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, and I can only imagine how difficult of a decision that must have been to make, but.
Well, for me, it wasn't hard because I didn't make it, you know, the
journey. Sure.
I imagine it was hard for them because
first time in history they've done that.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know, the biggest bummer for me, honestly, is the collectors, the folks that, you know, are doing sets, because like, I'm one of them. I have thousands of cards backing up, and there are some of them in this room that I am not going to send in unless, you know, it's $20 or so service level or under. And
but will we ever see that again?
Absolutely. I mean, we will get there.
Okay.
I am not going to sit around and let these cards pile up ungraded on my own. So, I mean, look, I'm a true collector. I want that back just as much as anyone. That's what kills me the most, is that we truly, I mean, we open at $20, you know, or $10, you know, we'll get crushed. And
yeah, for sure.
Are people grading the wrong type of cards? Is the base cards, right? Like, are people grading the wrong types of cards? And is that part of the problem?
We're never going to judge, you know, what people, you know, should or shouldn't grade. We did receive a crap ton of what you would call base cards, or what I would call base cards. a lot of Prism, a lot of, you know, 80s stuff. But look, people want to grade what they want to grade. I think the tough part for us are the speculators who you know, send in 100 cards at a, you know, when the rates are as low as they were, it's profitable to send in, you know, 100 1984 Fleer or Topps baseball cards. And if a couple of them hit tens, you know, you made your money. You know, so, but again, a lot of collectors do that. I do that too, because I want to complete those sets in particular grades, and all in PSA holders. And so it's not for us to judge. But the truth is that at the price level, all I can say is the demand was so high for base cards, for high end. I mean, it was just untenable. So.
Yeah, for sure. You had talked earlier about that Jordan 86 Fleer PSA 10 and about how an email went out internally a couple weeks ago where, you know, it just another 10 had been graded. And I imagine that's
one of the graders pinged me and said, you know, how cool is this? You know, check it out.
So is it tougher to get a 10 grade on that card today than it would have been had somebody submitted that card 5 or 10 years ago?
I don't believe so. I mean, I get asked this question all the time. I mean, our grading team is really good at their job. You know, there's been no, you know, change in policy or, you know, hey, let's, you know, the fact that people think we're managing population is just, you know, to me, it's kind of funny at this point because there's just not possible. Like, why would we do that? But it's just, I think a lot of it's perception. I think the one thing we have seen a lot of new submitters and a lot of cards that frankly shouldn't be graded, not because of the card itself, but because of the condition. And then a lot of the modern cards are frankly a lot lower quality than they used to be, mainly with centering and surface defects. Mm-hmm. But as it relates to the Jordan, I mean, I personally don't think so. The grading team hasn't, you know, changed in any way. I mean, in theory, you could look back, you know, over a long period of time because there are different people in the room, but at the end of the day, it is a human opinion. You know, they're looking at a card and rendering an opinion. But, you know, we've trained, our team goes through rigorous training. Every new hire goes through, you know, it's pretty hard to be a grader at PSA, to get the job and also to keep the job. So, you know, I think we're just getting really good at, you know, and consistent and making sure we're as accurate as possible.
Do you think there's a psychological burden on the grader, even if the training's consistent and the process is consistent, could maybe psychologically they just be aware of, holy heck, this is a massive card, it's super valuable, and therefore I really have to scrutinize it and be more tough on it than maybe I would have been 10 years ago when this card wasn't nearly as valuable as it is today?
Well, no, I mean, look, I think a big reason why PSA is what it is and the most trusted grading authority, in my opinion, I don't know if that's even, I think it hopefully is true, is because of how seriously we take cards like that. I mean, for years, way predating my involvement, way predating my, you know, getting cards graded with PSA, they have multiple people review every card. So, you know, a Jordan Fleer, like there's no situation where some junior grader is looking at that card and, you know, I mean, that card is looked at by multiple people. Yeah, to make sure it's accurate. And that's been the case for a long time. So, but yes, look, to be clear, we do, I would say, we want to get it right on high-end cards. Like we're not, mainly in authenticity, you know, like we're not that worried about a, you know, 2020 second year Zion base Prism card being faked. I mean, whoever wants to fake that card, you know, like that's the, like they probably have bigger problems. But, you know, the high-end cards are more likely to be faked and trimmed because it's more profitable. And so the biggest reason why we spend more time on the higher-end cards is because I would say the risk of some issue is much higher. And,
yeah.
Because, you know, PSA, we stand behind our grades. I mean, we buy back cards, you know, pretty regularly if they don't meet the grade that we rendered or if they turn out to be fake or trimmed that we missed. And we can see we made a mistake. And so that's a big reason why we do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's maybe something people don't know about, but that's a, actually, why don't you just explain that a little bit more for the audience who may not know about PSA's policy in that area?
Yeah. So we stand behind the label. So if you send in, or if you buy a card, let's say on eBay and it's a 10 and let's say it has, an obvious defect or a alteration that we should have caught, you can send it back to us and we confirm that we'll buy the card back, or we'll give you the difference. If it drops to an 8, we'll give you the difference in market value. And that's a really big deal. We don't do that. A key difference there, which people don't understand, is that's not, you're not eligible if you're the original submitter. So if you send us a trim card and we miss it and you say, hey, PSA, you know, this card's trim. And by the way, this happens, I mean, every day someone tries to get us to do, you know, we're like, hey, you're the original submitter. Like, this is your problem, not ours. I mean, it is, we should have caught it. And we learned from that experience, but it's not, you know, that's not a business model for people. So, and again, it happens every day someone tries. And so, you know, so we have that policy, but again, it happens on a weekly basis. There's a situation where I do it. I see it on eBay. I'm like, how's that card at 10? You know, it's off centered, and I'll send it to our team. Like, this is how seriously we take it. You know, we're taking money out of our pockets. Like, that's, this happened the other day with a 96 chrome or a 96 regular base tops Kobe, which was a 10. It's badly off centered. Someone DM'd me about it. I'm like, yeah, totally shouldn't be a 10. I'm not a grader, but I said, hey, let's get the card back and regrade it. Sure enough, wasn't a 10, and we compensated the owner. So we want the cards off the market that we screwed up.
Hmm. Really fascinating. That's really cool to hear. Yeah, that's wild. So you just talked about, you know, trimming. Obviously that's been going on for a long time. People have attended that. And I know that's a cat and mouse game that you guys have had to police against for a very, very long time. More recently, there's been some, you know, concern across social and that type of thing about like fake slabs. And is that a concern for you guys? How seriously is PSA taking that?
Very seriously. So we have a fraud team that pretty much we're on this. I mean, people send it to me and usually we've already seen it and have sent cease and desist letters or alerted the authorities. We have an active line with multiple authorities on that. We just, every time we see something, we send it to them. The trick is if someone, you know, says like, you know, in the eBay listing, like, this is not, you know, we're not this, it's a proxy, you know, they're very clear that it's fake. You know, they're not doing something illegal at that point. They're infringing on us. And so we're going to chase them, but you know, we're not the cops. Like, we can't, you know, shut them down. So it's hard for us. There's a line there that we can only do so much, which is kind of, I was alluding to before. So we have a lot of kind of covert and non-covert security features in our labels, in our slabs, that we can tell better than anybody if a slab is real. So I do think it's a responsibility of ours to work more closely with auction houses and with eBay and others to ensure authenticity of slabs. It is becoming a pretty big issue. And we can tell, like I said, a slab, that you cannot replicate our slab perfectly. It's just impossible based on the amount of security we have into it. And so again, there's things that no one knows about that are in that slab that we can, you know, run a check on, and then we're not going to tell anybody because then they could, you know, potentially fake it or try to. And so, you know, I think there's an opportunity for PSA to enable the hobby better, you know, in the transaction layer, to make that more trusted. And we're looking into a bunch of ideas there. But it's a huge issue. You know, I mean, weekly, you know, we're shutting someone down.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you guys have a team on it. It's definitely one of the scary things about the hobby for both collectors and investors, that, you know, that kind of thing could happen. So I'm glad you guys are on it for sure. Nat, you've been super generous with your time. And so we're going to wrap, but I want to get you out of here on this. One final question for you. I'd just like to know where you think the sports card market is going to be 5-10 years from now. What do you think, if you could look 5 years in the future, how do you think things are going to look compared to how they look today?
I mean, I'm very bullish, obviously. I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of digital content breaking, a lot of direct to consumer, you know, Topps and Panini and all the card companies hopefully are non-exclusive at that point, meaning Topps can produce basketball cards and Panini can produce baseball cards. I'd love to see more innovation in cards, you know, getting back to kind of the golden years, in my opinion, of the 90s and early 2000s. I think we're seeing a ton of kids enter the hobby. I think you're going to see a lot of, I personally think, innovation with, you know, the buying and selling process. You're seeing a lot of startup, VC funded startups for the first time ever, you know, and get in the card game, which I think is great. You know, from box breaking to transaction layers to vaulting to insurance to whatever. And that's great. I think you're going to see infrastructure build out that gives people confidence. Like, you know, when you buy that Jordan Fleer rookie card, you know it's real, first of all, and also you feel secured and protected. Maybe it's vaulted, maybe it's insured, maybe it's fractionalized, whatever the hell you want to do. You have that infrastructure at your fingertips. So I think there's a lot of good stuff happening. I'm, you know, slightly nervous about you know, bad actors. I'm not slight. I am, you know, I think it's on us. That's, I view it as my responsibility too, to protect the hobby from PSA's perspective as much as we can. We're not the only grading company, but we're going to do our part. You know, as prices continue to go up, it's becoming even more lucrative for scammers to make money off of it. So everyone has to stay extremely vigilant on, you know, what they buy is real, and you know, work with a grading company that you trust and an auction house that you trust. But assuming those things continue, we stay one step ahead of those scammers. I mean, the next 5 years are going to be awesome. The biggest thing, honestly, is basketball, baseball needs to go non-exclusive with card companies. I think people don't realize how freaking cool that'll be for the hobby. I mean, all that stuff behind you, the prism, like the Panini stuff, like it's good, but like it's nothing like it used to be. Panini, in my opinion. So
it'll be fun. Hopefully we get there. It'll be fun to see the innovation that occurs. I'm personally really excited about one of the reasons why I am so optimistic about the sports card market, and I talk about it frequently, is one of the exact reasons you just hit on, the fact that there is investment activity, there's VC activity, there's startups, there's technology that's coming into play. Companies are trying to really do innovative things. And as money's flowing into the hobby, not just from a buying card standpoint, but really more importantly, from fueling new companies that can then fuel the hobby's growth in the future and take the hobby in new directions. I think it's extremely exciting, and I think it's a great sign for where things are gonna be down the road. So I'm very happy to hear that optimism from you. And hopefully 5 years from now, we'll have seen all of that. Hopefully people will be watching this video back 5 years from now, and we'll have seen a lot of that innovation come to life and the hobby be in a really strong, healthy position. All right, guys, what an awesome interview. And if you want to hear more, if you want to hear the full uncut version of that interview, as well as all of Nat's business backstory, then you've got to listen to the interview on the Owner's Suite channel. Go to the Owner's Suite by Sports Card Investor on YouTube or on your podcast player. That's where you can hear the extended cut of this interview with a whole lot of additional information beyond what you just heard. That again is called the Owner's Suite by Sports Card Investor. Go there now and subscribe to that channel so you get interviews like this one in the future. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate you watching. See you again soon with our next episode.